Oh, well, you know, you don't have to worry about that. So I have my little watch here. So I'm happy to be able to give a talk in this session. As Gipso mentioned, I'm sort of a last-minute replacement for Francesca. I don't have an Italian accent, though I think mine's more fun, or at least more funny. So one way or the other. So this talk is based on some work that I did actually with Monte. Her graduate student, Josh Warren, who's now a postdoc at UNC. So actually I should credit NCSU for him. Because this is work that he did while he was a student at NC State. And we were also collaborating with Peter Langlois at the Texas Department of State Health Services. And we're really lucky in this work to have a lot of support from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, the National Science Foundation, the State of Texas, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So I'll talk a lot about our outcome here. We're changing focus just a little bit and talk about birth defects, congenital malformations, and so why am I interested in this area? Well, birth defects are the largest component of infant mortality, the leading cause of death among young children aged 1 to 4, the fifth-ranked cause of premature mortality in the United States, so that makes sense, right, because you're killing someone very young. And one thing that's interesting when we study malformations is that the prevalence of congenital malformations is very hard to estimate. So a lot of times these babies are more susceptible to spontaneous abortion or miscarriage later on, and because of increased in utero diagnostics, some women decide not to carry the pregnancies to term, and so they might have an induced abortion. In addition, a lot of the abnormalities are subclinical and aren't diagnosed at the time of delivery, but there's a lag, so people may not, for some malformations, even fairly serious ones, they may not find out until they're adults. But the prevalence is believed to be around 1 in every 33 births, so a very high prevalence of congenital malformations. The cause of the majority of birth defects is unknown, so that makes it fun to study as a statistician or an epidemiologist, because there are a lot of questions out there waiting to be answered. There have been some risk factors identified for a fairly small number of defects. So just a little bit about air pollution. And so what we looked at with Josh was the association between air pollution and congenital malformations. And there have been some work, in particular, I have been involved with some work at UNC that was done by Suzanne Gilboa, who is now at the CDC. We had looked at birth defects and as a function of air pollution or their association with air pollution exposure. There was a recent meta-analysis in Lit Review, and in the meta-analysis, they just found a few combinations of cardiac malformations and pollutants to be significant, and so here they are. Here are the pollutants, here are the defects. One thing you'll notice is these are fairly common defects, and that's been one issue with this research, is that often we can't study some of the more rare defects because of sample size concerns. But this meta-analysis had a couple of recommendations that we were interested in responding to. One was that the exposure assessment could be improved. One was that the birth defects were put into different groups by different investigators. So it's very difficult to do a meta-analysis because there's not a lot of consensus on how the birth defects should be grouped mechanistically. So for example, a lot of times people put all heart defects together, but some heart defects may be actually more related to oral clefts, for example, or jaw defects, and they are to other heart defects, depending on which tissue layers are forming each part of the body. And the other thing that was very of interest, of course, is the mechanism by which air pollution exposure could lead to the outcome, and that needed to be further investigated. So why did we feel like this was something important to work on? So one thing for a lot of these epi studies, they had not done any spatial analysis. So they had assigned exposure, for example, by distance to the nearest monitor. So there was a lot of room to improve the exposure assessment there in these studies. The other thing, going towards trying to figure out a biological mechanism, is that there was a lot of desire to identify critical windows in the pregnancies when a high exposure of a pollutant would more negatively affect the birth outcomes, okay? And so a lot of times people would just average exposures over the entire first trimester. They might, in the National Birth Defects and Prevention Study, which I work with, they take, for example, the month before the pregnancy through the first trimester and average over that time period. Obviously, if you have a really high pollution exposure at 39 weeks, it's probably not going to cause a cardiac malformation, or almost surely won't, because the heart should be formed by that time. So there's a very distinct window in which air pollution could act. And so what exactly is that mechanism? It'd be nice to know, for example, are high exposures at 3 weeks different from high exposures at 8 weeks in the pregnancy? That could tell us a good bit about the mechanism. The other thing that wasn't done in some of these previous studies is when they analyzed the outcomes, they treated them all as distinct outcomes, and they didn't do any kind of multivariate analysis. And we know a lot from embryology, for example, about how some of these effects are related. And so one thing that's ongoing work that we're doing, we won't present much about it today, is trying to come up with a map that links these defects in terms of the development of the embryo, because we know a whole lot about embryonic development. And so we should be able to borrow a lot of information from clinicians, and we're working with a medical geneticist at UNC to sort of create a roadmap for us to try to do smoothing across multivariate outcomes. And we'll look at three groups of outcomes modeled as multivariate today, but we're trying to extend that so that we don't have to group defects very much, and we can really look at, you know, 70 defects separately and for information about what cell layers they come from and things like that to shrink them intelligently towards each other. Other things is that we can do a better job modeling the spatial temporal behavior, and I'll show you some pretty nice pictures that make this case, that increase our flexibility in the model to really capture fairly complex relationships between exposure and outcome, and so we'll talk about that a little more in the future. Now, we carry out inference in the Bayesian setting. This helps us characterize uncertainty a lot better, do computation a lot better, and so that's where we're going today, and I'm just trying to get my watch all set because I haven't given the talk before, and I don't want to go too far over. All right, so we're really lucky to have access to the Texas Vital Records data. We have the subset we're looking at today, the vital records data we have, the mother resided at delivery in a region and time period that's covered by the Texas Birth Defects Registry, which we'll talk about in a moment. That we have those data between 1997 and 2004. We required at least some demographic information to be available in the birth record. Texas has geocoded their birth records to the residents at delivery. So they did a study based on some of the overlapping time periods, and they found that about 68% of pregnant women didn't move between the date of conception and the date of birth. So women get pregnant and they often move, right? The house is too small, they're expecting a baby, they want something more permanent. The ones who did move in this study, about half of them stayed very close geographically, okay? And the study was done in terms of a water exposure. So they looked at half of them had the same water supply source. So there is mobility during pregnancy, something we recognize. We can't do a lot about it here because we don't have a whole residential history during the time of pregnancy. But we hope the impact is fairly minimal given that most of them didn't move, and the ones who moved, you know, at least half of them stayed fairly close geographically. So just an idea of where babies are born in Texas. So here's a map showing the density of births. You can see some of the big cities, Dallas, Houston, et cetera, in Texas. And we're going to be concentrating on South Texas today. So how are we measuring pollution? So exposure assessment was a concern. Commonly people look at exposure from the air quality system monitors. So they're measuring PM2.5. We have daily averages there between 2000 and 2004. And then we also have access. Monty was able to get access to some of the speciated PM data. And so for nitrate and sulfate, that goes to that same time period. For elemental and organic carbon, that's just the last 2 years of the time period. So that gives you some idea from the air quality system where you might be able to get speciated particulate matter data coverage. One issue, however, with that system is here's the placement of the speciated data monitors. Okay, so the moral of the story is don't be born in the middle if you want us to study air pollution exposure because we have very little data there. So this works well for people who live near monitors, but not so well for people who live in other parts of the state. So how do you fill in the space-time gaps for the monitoring data? The monitors don't necessarily record observations on a daily basis. What we need is more complete coverage and a better understanding of what the exposures look like in the middle. And so the solution we worked with was using numerical model output data, and in particular CMAQ. And CMAQ is the Community Multiscale Air Quality Model. The CMAQ model produces air quality simulations based on differential equations that represent an underlying physical process. Okay, so the inputs to the model are meteorological information, emission rates, initial and certain boundary conditions. And then what the CMAQ model gives you are air quality simulations for the entire United States. Okay, this is produced at a fairly high spatial and temporal resolution without missing values. So for an analysis like the one we wanted to do, unless we really wanted to concentrate only on the urban areas, we're pretty much sunk unless we use a model like this. So this is one way to try to get better coverage in the rural areas. And you can tell Monty made this picture, I just showed you some before. But this gives you some idea of what the CMAQ air quality data are. So they're produced at a fairly fine scale, a 12 by 12 kilometer grid over Texas for the years 2001 to 2006. And we'll be looking at PM 2.5, but really concentrating on CPA, the particulate matter, so nitrate, sulfate, elemental carbon, and organic carbon. So the birth defects data. So Texas had a cluster of neural tube defects in Brownsville back in 1993, and they found that Hispanic moms in southern Texas were at higher risk of babies developing NTDs. And because of this cluster, the Texas birth defect study was formed. And so we're going to look at specifically at that South Texas region, including Houston, San Antonio, Corpus Christi, and Brownsville. This is a pretty big area. The data that we used from that registry were restricted to gestational age greater than 20 weeks, okay, to try to get it live births and fetal deaths only. Induced abortions were excluded. And so we ended up using a case control structure here because of the sample size and computational considerations. We had 2,567 cases, and we matched controls at a ratio of 2-1. The controls were matched on a number of variables, maternal age, year of birth, and infant gender. And in addition, we wanted to look at some covariates, including maternal race and ethnicity, paternal age. We matched on maternal age. And paternal race ethnicity was very closely related to maternal race ethnicity, so we just looked at the mom. Parental education of the mom and the dad, plurality of the pregnancy, parity, and the season of birth. We picked three cardiac defects, or really groups of defects of interest, chosen by the work that we had done with Suzanne at the CDC. So we're going to be looking at some of the biggest groups of birth defects, atrial septal defects, pulmonary artery and bowel defects, and ventricular septal defects. Now, we're following up on this analysis now with data from the National Birth Defect Prevention Study, where we have very much finer categorization of the defects. So we'll be able to look under a magnifying glass at some of those. And then what we did is we concentrated on speciated particulate matter. We used the CMAQ exposure simulations directly as the pollution exposure based on some empirical analysis that was done. And then also there weren't any studies that had really focused on the speciated PM2.5 species. So here's the Texas health regions, and just to show you the locations of the births. So it's a pretty small map, but you can see they're sort of concentrated, but there are a fair number along the border and also scattered in between here. So the interesting thing about these groups of defects is that they often co-occur. So this little Venn diagram shows here are the atrial septal defects, pulmonary artery and bowel defects, and ventral septal defects, and you can see that there's a lot of overlap. Okay, so lots of babies had two, lots of babies had all three actually, or not lots, but, 5%. So there was overlap in the defects. It wasn't just a one-type-only kind of situation. So sometimes people study only isolated defects. We considered multiple defects in this analysis. I would need to mention also we exclude known genetic syndromes like Down syndrome, so things like that where we know a genetic cause are excluded. So the methodology that Josh developed as part of his dissertation involved a non-parametric multivariate kernel stick breaking process, so the KSVP prior for the pollution risk effect. So why is this interesting? What does this add? Well, it allows for a non-stationary spatial temporal behavior. It allows for non-Gaussian risk effects. It allows us to go into multivariate land, so account for cross covariances. So if an exposure causes an atrial septal defect, then it may be likely also to cause some other type of defect. We use space and time and the masses and locations of the usual stick-breaking process, and it builds on previous work by a number of others, including Alan Gelfand, Monsi, David Dunson, Brian Rich, and others who worked on these problems. So just to give you an idea of what the model looks like, we have cardiac malformations where we're going to model, so these are 0-1, and then we're also interested in effects of the pollutant on specific defects. So I would like to concentrate a little bit down here. The A-to-J's are pollutant and defect-specific spatially and temporally varying coefficients. So what does that mean? Well, we have different air pollutants. We've got four different speciated components of PM that we're interested in. We're interested in effects on two different time scales. So the air pollution, right, changes day-to-day on calendar time. But pregnancy week is also of interest because we're interested in identifying critical windows, okay? So we're letting the coefficients change by pregnancy week from week 3 to week 8, which are considered to be the critical weeks for development of these parts of the heart. Okay. For those who haven't worked on a lot of health, reproductive health data, pregnancy dating is kind of a funny business, so we don't really know when conception occurs, but women are usually pretty good at reporting the first day of their last menstrual period. So week 3 is about the time you would expect conception actually to occur if she has very regular cycles, but there's a lot of variability woman to woman. So weeks 1 and 2 of pregnancy, the woman's not really pregnant, okay? So the egg hasn't been fertilized at that point. That's how they're dated. If you have IVF or something like that, then you know exactly when the baby comes into being, but if it's natural, then that's difficult to determine, even if you know when intercourse occurred. So we're going to have separate defects for each pollution, separate estimates for effect estimates for each pollutant, separate effect estimates for each week of pregnancy, okay, to look for critical windows, and also separate effect estimates for space, because the composition of particulate matter changes over space. So the PM2.5 could have very different components in San Francisco than it does in Raleigh-Durham, where we live. So there's the thought that there could be different effects based on space because the composition of the particulate matter could differ from location to location. But the only way that we can do all this estimation right is that we need to have some sort of correlation structure in those coefficients so that we can do some smoothing. So this is just a little more detail, which I think I'll skip over a little bit, and talk a little bit about the structure and the smoothing. And so what we do is we have a correlation matrix for the coefficient effect estimate that has a spatial component, so closer together in space, maybe more highly correlated exposure effects. Same thing with pregnancy week, right? We would expect risk factors at weeks 3 and 4 to be more similar to risk factors at weeks 3 and 8. And also there are cross correlations across the different malformation groups. So there might be a higher correlation between atrial and ventral septal defects than between atrial septal defects and pulmonary artery valve defects. And so we can do all sorts of things, fancy things with the covariance structure, depending on what kind of kernel function we use and things like that. So I think I'll, in the interest of keeping us on track, I'll skip over a lot of the details. This is the slide for Sudipto, so that he knows more about what we did. Now, we did do a short simulation study, and I just want to point out a couple things. The first model we looked at is the proposed model, Josh's proposed model. A special case of that model is a multivariate Gaussian spatial temporal process prior. Okay, so that's really nice because it can collapse back down on a parametric model. And then the third model is a very naive model, which assumes independence in space and time. Okay, so model 3 isn't really doing as much smoothing. Model 2 is going to be a parametric model, and model 1 we anticipate should be the most flexible. And so what we found in the simulation study is that the model Josh introduced did have a lot of flexibility. Even in the case where model 2 or model 3 was the right model to use, because those are essentially both special cases or limiting cases of that. In the more complicated setting, so if you did have a case where you didn't have Gaussian effects, data settings, then the model had better performance in terms of mean square error. And it was never really killed, okay? So even if the other models were appropriate, this model kept up pretty well, so that was nice. So I think it's a little bit easier to summarize using a picture. And so this is for nitrate in Brownsville, and the birth defect was the pulmonary artery and valve defects. And there are six interval estimates here. For weeks 3 through 8 of pregnancy. So I'm sorry you can't really see that, but I wanted to get them all on the same line. So here's week 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 of pregnancy. And what you see is sort of behavior like you might expect. The last model, model C, doesn't do a lot in terms of smoothing, and so we see really wide parameter interval estimates here. Okay. Model 2 is the normal model, and it's, you can see it's sort of shrinking everybody a lot. Getting rid of a lot of the signal that we might think we see in the naive model. Model 1 is Josh's proposed model, and you can see it's sort of a compromise, okay? It's shrinking some, but not necessarily over-shrinking compared to the spatial temporal Gaussian model. So this tended to be the story all around. You can see there is some signal at week 3 being an increased risk, and week 7 here in Brownsville. So just a different example, elemental carbon and ventricular septal defects now in San Antonio. You see, again, the same sort of behavior where you have in the independence model wide interval estimates, so maybe we could do get a little more power if we did more shrinkage. In the non-parametric model, we've shrunk a little more, but also gotten reduced the size of our interval estimates pretty nicely, and there's the Gaussian model. And so this is sort of flipping through. Now this is still San Antonio, but nitrate and atrial septal defects. So we see sort of similar patterns for all the combinations that we considered. So here's Brownsville as opposed to San Antonio, still nitrate and atrial septal defects. So organic carbon and atrial septal defects in Houston. And so still you see very similar behavior of these methods. So what we conclude based on the application is that Josh's model really provided a nice bit of the data. The multivariate Gaussian spatial temporal process prior missed a lot of the significant weaks that the first model detected. It seemed to be sort of over-shrinking everything together. We tended to see a signal at week 3 and then also at week 7 and 8 for different defects and pollutants across most of the locations. So mechanistically, it's a little hard to figure out exactly what that means, because even though we've restricted to atrial septal defects, there is a lot of heterogeneity inside that group. So we're hoping when we use the National Birth Defects Prevention Study data, which is very specific but much more specific in terms of diagnosis, maybe they've got 85 different codes as opposed to three, but for hearts maybe they have 40-something. We can get a lot more power to try to figure out very specific defects. So in the model, we simultaneously characterize the association between exposure to four different types of speciated particulate matter on malformation risk during the critical time period of the pregnancy. We have spatial models that allowed for changing risk across space. So you will notice, for example, if we go San Antonio versus Brownsville, there was a bit of a difference in the spatial effects. So not exactly the same in those two different locations for the same pollutant and defect. We identified some critical time periods in which increased pollution exposure could be associated with malformation risk. And so these are just results that sort of build the evidence that we already have in the literature, thinking that there may really be something going on between air pollution and common cardiovascular malformations. And so what we're working on right now is trying to do a little more sophisticated borrowing of information to facilitate analysis of rare defects, not to have to group defects together in such big groups. And so we're I was laughing. We talked at lunch about one of the initiatives that APHA is considering about requiring for big studies. This is the MBPPS is an 8-site study to have a central IRB, and it doesn't have a central IRB, and getting space-time data out of 8 separate IRBs is loads of fun. But we, especially when you're getting latitude and longitude and dates of birth, so they love that. So that's some place where I would love to have a central IRB there to get that, but the study actually doesn't have a coordinating center. The CDC does keep a lot of the data. They don't want to keep this, and I don't blame them. So at any rate, that's what we did. Thank you very much.
Do we have questions for Amy? I'll ask one.
Okay.
Have you thought about doing variable selection here in the sense of, like, what is the most potent combination of pollutants for the outcome and so on? In some discussions I've had with investigators, sometimes these sorts of questions are becoming more relevant nowadays.
Yeah, and whether they're, something that would be really interesting to look at is whether they're synergistic associations. And so some of the work we're doing right now in my R01 is trying to get at ways to look at interactions more intelligently, but not intelligently, but just feasibly with computations. But we're not actually looking at the spatial component, so that might be something
we can work on. In this work, we're only looking at six of the components, so it's not really viable. Yeah. Like, only want to understand the effects of all of them, because they are the major components. So when you look at it for your 22, you really have to do the variable collection and
right.
We're doing that, but it's quite difficult to work with the variable selection in the context of the topic for your study.
There are definitely challenges. Well, let's thank Amy again.